Hi, I'm Lydia Turner.
And I'm Matt Till.
And this is Machinery Matters, a podcast brought to you by Farm Contractor and Large Scale Farmer magazine. Head to our website, farmcontractormagazine.com, for more latest news.
In this month's episode, we talked to Stephanie Berkeley from the Farm Safety Foundation about the impact that stress can have on the day-to-day lives of agricultural workers. After that, we also speak to Rob Hill from John Deere, who gives us some handy tips on how to get the forager ready for the upcoming grass season.
First, the latest agriculture machinery news as of April 19th, 2021. Following a record number of tractor registrations in March, the Agricultural Engineers Association has released a breakdown of 2021 registrations by region and horsepower. The East of England saw significant increases, as did Northern Ireland and the South West, while the Home Counties and West Midlands saw a drop in units registered with the DVLA. Looking at the horsepower brackets, it's a tale of two halves, with high horsepower tractors and compact sub 160 horsepower tractors both seeing increases. Strangely, though, tractors in the 161 to 200 horsepower bracket, the national average, saw a decrease in demand. In an exciting launch that included dog sled racing, saunas, and a Metallica cover, Valtra introduced the fifth generation of its N&T ranges, packed with new features. Bringing exact control to its loader range, the company also revealed its Prevision lift and load software integrated into the Smart Touch armrest. Finally, Kunfarm Machinery has added a moisture sensor option to its variable chamber baler and baler wrapper combination machines. In a series of technology updates, the manufacturer has also added a bale weighing option to its combination units and has adapted the pickup and bale channel on large square baler models. So this episode is covering an extremely important topic, which is Stress Awareness Month. And this year, the Stress Management Society has highlighted three key areas of concern for stress. This is feelings of disconnection, uncertainty, and a worrying loss of control. With the COVID-19 pandemic, I feel like these issues have only been amplified, and the farming and agriculture community has definitely been affected by this. In light of this, myself and Matt are absolutely delighted to welcome Stephanie Berkeley, manager at the Farm Safety Foundation, and, or as you may know them, Yellow Wellies. Stephanie, it is great to have you speaking with us today.
Thanks, Lydia, and thanks for having me on. I'm really pleased.
No problem at all. For those who don't know Yellow Wellies and the Farm Safety Foundation, could you tell us a little about the organisation and the work that it does?
Yeah, okay. So we are a registered charity. We're based in the Midlands, but we UK. There are only three of us working in the charity, so we are small, but we've got big ambitions. We were founded and were funded by NFU Mutual, the insurance company, in 2014 to preserve and protect the physical and mental well-being of the next generation of farmers. We've got an education program where we've delivered farm safety training to over 13,000 young farmers across the UK at the land-based colleges and unis and through the Young Farmers Club network. We've also a business program where we're delivering mental health and farming sessions to businesses such as Co-op, AHDB, Tesco, McDonald's, lots of people who are face to face with the farming community. Our Mind Your Head and Farm Safety Week campaigns are now widely recognised and respected. And we work with many different partners in the industry and in government, both in the home nations and internationally, to share experiences, knowledge, and drive a real change in attitudes and behaviours to risk taking and mental health in an industry that still has the poorest safety record of any occupation in the UK.
And I mean, I think I saw all over social media the wonderful campaign for mental health awareness that you were running recently. And it's absolutely fantastic. And I think even more so, those things have become extremely important with what we're dealing with as a society at the moment. So I'm just wondering, what do you think in terms of obviously the last 12 months have been particularly difficult for everyone? And what do you think that the impact of that has been on those working in the agriculture community?
Yeah, 2020 was a really challenging year for everyone, and farmers are no different. Our industry at the minute faces some unique pressures with COVID and isolation, with Brexit, with and more, and a lot of farmers are feeling that on the effect of it on their mental health. I mean, operating on a farm when you're feeling stressed or you're experiencing any kind of mental health problem isn't safe. So it's just really important for us to raise awareness that whilst you're your farm's biggest asset, you know, you could be your farm's biggest liability if you start to do a job and you're actually not in the right headspace.
Yeah, for sure. And definitely that is a really important message to get through to people. And I think, you know, you mentioned there about making sure that you recognise whether you're stressed or if you're dealing with anything and, you know, not becoming that liability. Is there anything you think people could look out for in terms of signs of stress and the impact of this on their mental health or in themselves or the people around them?
Yeah, the thing about stress is the first signs can be really difficult to recognise, as everybody's signs are very personal and very individual to them. You know, in farming, there's been a stigma around mental health, which is improving, but there still can be a tendency to hide those symptoms because you're worried about what people might say or think about you. There's physical symptoms like your general appearance, people that could look tired because their sleep is affected by it, weight loss or weight gain, something extreme like that. But importantly, there's emotional and behavioural signs, you know, and uncharacteristic outbursts, irritability, aggression, negative talk, things like that. In the workplace, it can be also signs in your colleagues' conversations, missing deadlines, working too long, turning up late for things that they wouldn't normally, just something that's just not their normal personality. And obviously things like poor paperwork, these things can act as those sort of triggers. There's things to be aware of and things that should really prompt you to have a conversation with somebody about how they're feeling right now, because even if it can't do it face to face, if you ignore it, it could have deadly consequences, especially in farming.
And I mean, farming and agriculture in general is unique in a lot of ways because we work those long hours. We have these very stressful seasons where we'll be coming into the foraging season now, which is one of the most stressful times of the year. What would you say to someone who believes that the stress they're feeling is just a normal part of their job?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Farmers just face so many stresses. They work for long periods of the time on their own. They're at the mercy of the weather, you know, trade agreements, and they live and they work in the same place, so there's no escape from it. You know, there are so many things that are out of their control, so it's easy to understand how they can be stressed. Stress and anxiety will make you feel tired, weak, empty, incapable, and unsuccessful. I mean, we have physical health, same as we have mental health. They change from day to day, so we need to give both of them the same respect and airtime. I mean, if you break your leg when you're playing five-a-side football, you know, chances are you're going to dine out on the story, you know, for a long time. People will offer you sympathy and, you know, best wishes for a speedy recovery and check in on you. But actually, when it comes to mental health matters, there seems to be a real discomfort and reluctance to talk about it. There's an underlying shame when you talk about stress, burnout and anxiety. It's not part of normal working, you know, and actually that shame makes the situation worse because it means the person will feel even more alone and feel that there's nobody else that they can actually talk to about it.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, you touched on it slightly there about sort of, you know, having those discussions and, you know, making sure that you're the people around you are aware what's going on. But is there anything else you'd recommend to people in terms of tips to help them and the people around them address how much work might be affecting their mental health?
Yeah, I think sometimes you do need to take stock, you know, take a step back and take stock of your life and your work. You know, you find it difficult waking up in the mornings. You know, are you motivated to go to work? Do you find meaning in what you're doing? Are you feeling irritated and agitated and annoyed all the time or more so than ever? Do you get sick? You know, how are your energy levels? All of these kind of things that if you're noticing that you're becoming short-tempered and you're starting to snap at people, you know, if you have those feelings, you really do need to speak to somebody. The thing is, what you could try to do is change your mindset. Think about it as, and that's a very sort of deep thing to do, but it actually, it's about looking at the situation as temporary. Will pass, that, you know, there's a light at the end of the tunnel rather than thinking there's no way out. I mean, don't worry about being perfect and what others might think. And that's more about being at peace with yourself. Delegate tasks and ask for help. You don't have to do it all on your own, you know, and actually take a mental health day off. I know for a farmer listening to this will go, I write like I can never take a day off. But there's a New Zealand dairy farmer called Wayne Langford, who I would totally recommend anybody reading his blog. His blog is basically the YOLO farmer, I believe. But he struggled with his mental health. And actually, he realized that the things that I talked about, the difficulty waking up and the irritability, he was feeling all of that. And actually, he realized he had always put his farm first to the detriment of his family and his you know, his wife. And actually, on the morning of his birthday, one morning, he decided he was going to make a change. And he was going to live. He was going to do one thing every day that made him feel like he was living, you know, that got the adrenaline going and got the blood rushing. And he's recorded it on a blog. You can follow him actually on Instagram. He's brilliant. He's at YOLO Farmer New Zealand. But also, he is so good. He's so honest and open about what he has experienced, you know. But also being open and honest about your feelings to people that you love and trust. And trust is a big issue as well. Acknowledging that you've got some kind of stress or burnout, you know, will actually mean that you can decide logically how to take those steps. It'll improve your career. It'll improve your way forward. You know, it'll get you on the right path, you know, to that type of personal and professional growth and hopefully back to happiness.
Yeah, and I think I saw that article about that, and it was a really, really inspiring story. And I've got to say, I do love the phrase this will pass. Yeah. Because it's something I think it was a family member of mine who said that to me not too long ago, and it sticks with you. And it's about focusing on, again, a very common phrase, like the light at the end of the tunnel in that regard.
And this is it. I mean, even trying to find something, you know, that you can use as a mantra, whether or not it's, you know, the greater the storm, the brighter the rainbow, all of those kind of things that realise that it is temporary, you know, and there is light at the end of the tunnel. And thinking of that positivity side of things rather than focusing on what you can control right now and what you can't, and letting go of something that you can't control, because it's not the best use of your energies, really.
Yeah, for sure.
What support can people find, specifically with Yellow Wellies and the Farm Safety Foundation, but perhaps elsewhere if there's other organisations? Oh.
Gosh, are there other organisations? We are so lucky in this industry that we have a wealth of fantastic organisations. If you need help, the help is there no matter where you look to find it. If you want to go to online forums, they're there. They've got the Farming Forum on all people like that, and you've got Home on the Farm, which is part of that as well, which helps to deal with the mental health and just private life and everything that affects farming life. There are things like RABI. They have a mental well-being platform, which is really good. And you can test, you know, almost journal how you're feeling on an ongoing basis. It also gives you access to one-to-one counselling if you need it. We have the Farming Community Network, RABI, as I said before. You know, if you're in Norfolk, Suffolk or Worcestershire, you've got YANA. We have got so many farm and rural support organisations out there available that know what you're going through, that can empathize and help you find the way forward, whether or not it's professional help that you require, whether it's mentoring. You know, if you're in Northern Ireland, there's Rural Support, there's RSABI in Scotland that cover everything from succession planning right through to debt restructuring to mental health support. We're very, very lucky in this industry. We also have two resources on our website, yellowwellies.org. The first one is the little book of Minding Your Head, because I think we all have an obligation to learn more and educate ourselves about those signs and symptoms, how to start a conversation, which can be very difficult given the subject matter, and also how to get people the help that they need, because it's not about us diagnosing anybody, because we're none of us are medical experts in that. But the thing is, we can get them to the medical experts if we know and we recognise and we're not afraid to ask, are you okay? And that's the really key point. Are you okay is a question. We say it every day to so many people. How many of us wait for the answer? You know, and that's a really key issue that we need to start listening to people. We need to start looking out for people and noticing when things aren't right. Somebody might be struggling and that conversation might need to happen. And also, we've got the National Directory of Farm and Rural Support organisations. That's also hosted on the resources pages of their website, and that is also available from the Princess Countryside Fund.
I think it sounds like a good idea. I think Matt will probably agree with me on this, to get those links put with some sort of resource for this podcast, because there's some really great organisations that people can get hold of there. So that's definitely something that hopefully our listeners will be able to find after this. As you've mentioned, there's such a broad range of organisations that people can reach out to, and so many people who are clearly having this discussion. But do you think in recent times we've seen a greater willingness to discuss mental health within the agriculture community? And if not, why do you think?
No, yes, there has definitely been a greater willingness to discuss it. I mean, there's more awareness of the issue in the industry as a start, which is driving those conversations. Our research that we've done for the last 4 years suggests that 88% of farmers under the age of 40 rate poor mental health as the biggest hidden problem in farming at the moment. And 89% of them, and that's nearly 9 out of 10, believe that talking about mental health in farming will remove that stigma that's attached to it. So we know those conversations are starting in the next generation. However, the older farmers are the ones who possibly need a little bit more encouragement to speak up. And they can, knowing that, you know, it's normal. Everybody has mental health. And this is the thing. You know, we all have it. Sometimes it's good. Sometimes it's bad. And just like physical health, if we're not doing well, we'll go and see a doctor. Same with mental health. We have to do that because they do affect each other.
And kind of finally, there's all this good work being done. We know that you've just said that people are talking about it more, but what can be done to encourage more discussions about this? How do we, I mean, it's been particularly difficult over the last 12 months because we haven't been able to see anyone, which is normally how people start these conversations, isn't it?
Yeah, it's so true. I mean, even with things like the show season being cancelled last year, those circles of community that farmers rely on to support each other seem to have been blocked off to them. So it's really important, especially this year, because when we started raising awareness of the issue, you know, we thought we needed to encourage a culture within farming that explicitly recognises how the job can and does impact on the well-being of everybody living and working in farming, and how poor mental health can have a direct and deadly impact on the job. Given the year we've just experienced, you know, and the continued poor safety record in the industry, making sure we're all looking after both the physical and our mental health has never been more relevant. I mean, in the last 12 months, calls to farming charities have increased. So we do need to be concerned about the number of people in our industry feeling high levels of distress, especially now. It's great that you're highlighting this as part of Stress Awareness Month. We need to keep pushing to ensure people know that help is available and actually encourage them to ask for it.
Yeah, for sure. And that, you know, you touched on it there, that there definitely is probably still a little bit of a stigma, would you say, in terms of the older generation, you know, that historical notion and embedded in people that, you know, reaching out and speaking isn't necessarily what you do. You just get on with it and carry on. And it's really great that we have, you know, voices like yourself who can speak to people and let them know, you know, it's not an issue, it's not a problem. There are people here, you know, speak to your friends and family if you don't want to go to the organisation first. But the most important thing is to talk to them.
Absolutely. And it's somebody that you trust. And this is the thing, because that's what we all need to do, because farmers are so good at looking after everything, their land stock, their livestock, their land, their machinery, everything else. But they put themselves somewhere quite far down that list. You know, they don't think that they're the most important thing. And the thing is, they are, you know, and that's the first time you're asking somebody that is the most selfless person in the world to put themselves first. Now, that's why we're talking about it needs to be a cultural change, because it's not what they normally do. They always put themselves, everybody else above them. You know, and I think that's the really important thing that we need to do as an industry and as a supporting industry. we need to let people know that the help is out there. We need to have confidence to be able to have that conversation. And if you're going to ask somebody, are they okay? Be prepared for the answer, because I think at this time we need to assume that every single one of us is struggling to a larger or lesser extent. It's probably safer to do that than wait for cracks to show in somebody. So I think we need to be honest with our own vulnerabilities and our own situation in order to encourage other people to be the same.
No, I think that's a really important point, and of several really important points brought up during this. Thank you so much for taking part, Stephanie. That's been really interesting and really enlightening.
No, it's been a pleasure to be involved. It's one of those things I care very, very passionately about, and there are so many wonderful people out there, you know, doing work face to face with farmers.
For sure. And like I mentioned earlier, we will make sure that the links and organisations are available to people. If you feel like, you know, anything in this podcast today has touched you or touched anyone close to you, then those links and those numbers will be there for you to reach out to anybody. So again, Stephanie, thank you so much for taking part. It's been an absolute delight. Me and Matt have loved speaking with you, and I'm sure we'll be speaking with
you. That's great, Lydia and Matt. Really, really appreciate you giving us the opportunity to get involved in this. Thank you.
You just heard from Stephanie Berkeley about how you can reduce stress in your day-to-day life. Next up, I have a talk with Rob Hill about how you can reduce your stress in the grass cutting season, which, as you'll all know, is just around the corner. We're joined by Rob Hill from John Deere. He's going to be talking to us about getting the forager ready for the foraging season. We're obviously coming up to that now. It's busy time for everyone, and the last thing anyone needs is their machine going through any unnecessary downtime. So, Rob, thanks for joining us on Machinery Matters.
No problem. Thanks for having me, Matt.
No problem at all. And I guess we should really start with what should have been done at the end of the last season, because any sort of harvesting maintenance, there tends to be a put-to-bed part of the season, whether that's done on-farm or by a regular dealer. So what sort of condition should people be pulling their foragers out of the shed in?
Yeah, I mean, look, typically I'd love to say that everyone is good and cleans them down thoroughly and does all repairs and gets the machine nearly fully ready before they put it away. But obviously at the end of the season, there's time constraints and not everything can be done. But in reality, I mean, the main things to get done is give the machine a thorough cleaning. So again, typically most foragers, you know, they've finished their maize harvest in the back end of the year. There's a lot of muck and soil potentially and maize build up on the machine. They get they're very dirty, and if they're put away in that condition, it makes the job of getting them ready much more difficult. So yeah, obviously giving them a thorough cleaning, oiling them up to make life easier when you get them out over the winter or whatever, to get some of the repairs done, etc. Likewise as well, I mean, again, this is kind of nearly through the season, or certainly at the end of the season. If it's a simple thing, I know, but maybe to any faults that they've had during the season or things they've noticed, to make a list of them or have them ready that they can discuss it with the dealer if they want support from that point of view, or to order parts, etc. You know, so maybe they can get that done before they're trying to get it ready, so they're a bit more organized. And that can obviously be done with them with a piece of paper, or more commonly, you know, taking pictures with your phone to remind you, or that kind of stuff. And again, it all helps remind you when you do get the machine out of the shed.
And of course, now John Deere, alongside a lot of the industry as well, have technical solutions for that, for more proactive things, especially if it's to do with sensors or electronics within the machine, don't they?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, for a lot of the things there, I mean, the machines themselves, any errors that come up from sensors, obviously they're recorded on the machine. So it keeps a log of those. So again, a user or a trained technician can go in and look at the error codes that have occurred on the machine, how often they've occurred, etc. And likewise, that can sometimes lead to a sensor that's due to fail or another issue on the machine. likewise as well, with technologies moved forward as well, we do have the ability, along with some other manufacturers as well, to do some of this kind of work remotely. So through telematics or JD Link in our case. So that those codes are being sent wirelessly to the owner or likewise to the dealer and stored on the cloud for access whenever.
Okay. So lots of different things that should have already been done. I've heard different things from different people in regards to something that's a bit more backbreaking in regards keeping a machine ready for work. And with some machines, it's recommended that you kind of try and take the weight off the tyres so that you don't have any flat spots. Obviously, tyre technology has come a fair way over time, but can that still be an issue for people?
Not so much anymore, Matt. I mean, I think going back in the years, yeah, tyres were certainly a little bit different. Of course, it does help taking headers off and leaving that weight off. But, I mean, in reality, you know, these machines tend to be used for longer and longer. Contractors are doing more crops with them and getting more utilisation out of the machines. So the big long periods where they're not used is nearly getting shorter in many ways. Sometimes the season has gotten longer. You know, if we look at the grass season, many customers or farmers have gone to a multi-cut season. So guys are potentially starting in April and finishing in September, even just for grass. And likewise as well, they have other crops there. So like we said already, you've got maize, whole crop, and potentially miscanthus or willow in certain areas also, you know. So it could be a long season.
It can indeed. Hopefully no one who's started in April is waiting for the Machinery Matters podcast for this advice. Yeah. I'm sure they're already ready to
absolutely
go.
Yeah.
Okay, so we pull the machine out the shed. We're getting it ready to go. Can you give us a brief kind of walk around the machine, walk around the header, pointing out the main areas that might need attention after a couple of months in the shed?
Yeah, so again, look, starting with the header, really, I guess the front of the machine, it's where your crop goes in, and I guess we'll focus on grass because that's what's around the corner, as you say, Matt. So I guess, yeah, first things, have a look at your gauge wheels. You know, I mean, check tire pressures in those, make sure the tires are still in good condition. From that point of view, likewise, make sure there's no cracks or bends in them. And that they're freely adjustable, because I say it's very important that you're able to adjust them easily in the field at the blink of an eye, depending on crops and conditions. Again, run those wheels, check the bearings, give them a shake and inspect it visually from that point of view. Moving on to the pickup reel then. Okay, so here we want to be really checking our tine condition, seeing is there a lot of wear there on those tines, potentially they might last another season, or it might just be worth biting the bullet and changing all those tines. If they're still in good nick and you're happy to proceed and use them for the first cut or whatever, I'd recommend taking off some of the tine bands and having a look at the cam track at either end of the pickup, and likewise assess any of the bearings in there for excessive wear, etc. Likewise as well, when we're talking about the tines and the tine bands, we really want to be looking here to make sure there's no contact between them, or likewise that something hasn't hit it or bent or is causing wear, because again that can obviously cause an issue down the road, and that's something everyone wants to avoid from that point of view. Simple things like that. Chains, gearboxes, you know, making sure the tensions are set right in those, the chain has plenty of life left in it, etc. Gearboxes, checking them for oils, any of the bearings that need assessing on there from a drive point of view. Your main crop press or roller that the header has on the front, again, check it's in good nick, that the bearings in it are good and all tight and ready to go. The auger itself, again, making sure that it's set up correctly, if there's any damage, etc., that needs to be rectified with it. And again, rear strippers, so that the position of it is right for getting the crop in. Another point on the pickup, at the back of the pickup, so if you imagine where the crop comes in off the back of the auger and is then going into the feed rolls at the front of the harvester, where that material comes in off the auger. We've got some wear plates there, and all machines have it, where the direction of the crop changes effectively. You know, it's being brought in from either side of the auger and then traveling into feed rows. So again, those wear plates, that they take a lot of hammer, you know, there's a lot of crop passing through them. So again, check those to see that they're okay and they're able to go, or potentially if they're getting down to a paper thin state, we want to be looking at changing those, because you don't want the need to be doing that in the middle of the day when you should be chopping grass. Summing up really on the header, I guess, Matt, you know, this is it's where a lot of things can start. It's where your crop flow starts. It's where you're picking the material up off the ground, and potentially as well, it's where good performance of the machine starts as well. Likewise with crop flow, but also any wear. So again, an incorrectly set header, i.e., too low, could potentially be causing excessive wear, not only to the header but also through the wear components on the machine, from excessive soil coming up with the grass, etc. So again, making sure you can make these adjustments easily and set it up correctly is key, really, from that point of view.
And this is all stuff that's well worth, whether it's taking you a couple of hours in the morning because you've done this kind of put to bed servicing at the end of the last season, or whether it takes you a full day because you did just drop it in the shed, you had other things going on. All stuff that's worth doing, because I noticed you went from belts and wear plates, which are annoying but maybe minor pieces of repair that need doing in the field, to rather catastrophic failures if they're not set right with the gearbox and making sure that all the oil levels are right, which could really put a hamper on the season, couldn't it?
Absolutely. So again, if we move back then and go on to the machine itself, so again, from the header point of view, I guess check that the connections of where the header goes on are all in good condition, where the shaft drive comes on, if there's quick couplers there, you know, make check those for wear, etc. Any of the hydraulics and electric functions, again, simple things, we're checking for leaks, we're making sure they're all fitting in properly and safely as well. On the machine then, say first thing we're looking at really there is our feed rolls. Okay, so again, we're given the feed roll housing, a visual inspection, I guess, first of all. And as you say, that would be something that you'd try to be doing daily anyway. But in this case, we're probably looking a bit closer and maybe, as you say, checking things like bearings. We're checking the tension of those feed rolls. So maybe they were changed for the last crop that machine did and I need to be adjusted back for grass settings. And likewise, all that information will be in your operator's manual.
Interrupt you a little bit there? You mentioned checking the electrics and things like that, and I guess that also links back to making sure that machine's clean when it goes in the shed, because we know with other machinery, vermin are very attracted to anything that's kind of left around things, and the electric wires seem to be their favorite snack when they run out of anything else to eat, don't they? So
yeah, no, absolutely.
Okay, sorry, I interrupted you there.
No problem at all, Matt. So again, say we're checking those feed rolls. Likewise, again, we'll look if there is any damage to them, that where maybe something's has been taken in, you know, the foragers are out in fields and they can pick a stone or etc. or whatever else is in front of them. If there's damage to any of those feed rolls, can it be fixed? Should it be fixed? But likewise, other things to consider is look at how that damage was occurred. You know, feed rolls are rotating and can rotate in both directions. So damage occur taking something into the machine, or was it when something came in that it was reversed back out? So, you know, if it was damage taking it in, maybe it went further and you might need to look further back the machine for more damage, or vice versa. If it was damaged during the reversing process, hopefully that's the only damage you'll have on the machine itself. Again, moving back to the rear feed rolls, I say again, checking them, same kind of thing for bearings, kind of stuff. Your lower rear feed roll, typically they're a smooth roll, and there's a smooth roll scraper on those, and again, checking those are set up. They need to be set pretty tight, you know, down to tolerances of less than a mil or 0.1 of a mil. So again, making sure that they're set correctly, or likewise if they're worn and you can't get a good setting on it, potentially that's something we need to think of changing on there from that point of view. Other things as well, again, some of the machines have different way of accessing feed rolls, etc. But again, making sure that all those features work, because say there might be one way of doing it when you're in the yard or you're taking it off to do that long inspection or that big job. But again, for that quick V opening that some of these headers can, or these feed rolls can do, potentially that's something you might want to make sure that you can do that easily in the yard before you get to the field. Because again, if it's something you want to do and you find that there's a mechanism seized or damaged or whatever, again, it's obviously easier to make that repair and have it ready in the yard rather than be trying to do it in the field when the pressure's on.
Of course, yeah. No. You don't want to be messing around with that when there's 4-part trailers sat behind you in the field waiting, do you?
Absolutely not. No. Moving back then, I guess we're into the cutter head. So here, really, we're looking at knives. And to say again, we're looking at the knife condition on the machine. Potentially, this is the time we're going to put a new set of knives in the machine. So again, decide whether that's something you're going to do by seeing how much wear is left on them. Again, not only the knives need to be considered to be replaced, also look at the bolts that hold them down, and likewise the threaded bars that hold the knives on the cutter head as well. These have a life as well. They're not just they're not potentially there to designed for the life of the machine. They're set at a high torque, they're under a lot of strain, and each manufacturer will have different recommendations of what the life of those bolts and thread bars should be. So again, that'll all be in operators' manuals from that point of view. Once you've got that bit done, really the next most important part around the cutter head really is your shear bar, you know. So it's not only about having sharp knives, again, it's also about having that shear bar, a nice straight shear bar that is working properly. Again, depending on the age of your machine, etc., it might be a manual adjust shear bar where you're basically screwing a bolt in, a threaded bar, etc., to move that shear bar in and out. So again, making sure that mechanism is free and easy to adjust is obviously important, because again, this will be something that you'll most likely be doing when you're out in the field or out and about. Or likewise as well, if it's operated automatically or operated by motors, etc., again, make sure that they're working fully and able to get their full travel, etc., on there. And likewise, any lubrication or greasing or maintenance that different manufacturers recommend, ensure that's done as well. Because again, there's one thing with shear bars and knives, etc. Having a sharp knife is good, but again, mm-hmm. if you've got a big gap between your knife and your shear bar, you know, you're going to wear those knives out quicker. Your chop quality is going to decrease, and likewise, your fuel consumption is going to go up accordingly. So again, not what anyone wants from that respect.
No, of course, and the whole point of this, it's not just that the machine kind of runs with no problems for the next few months. It's that it's doing the best job it possibly can do in the field, isn't it? Because bad silage goes much further than just what happens in the field, doesn't it? It has a wide effect.
Yeah, well, look, absolutely. I mean, we're talking here about the machines running smoothly, as you say, Matt, and that basically is ultimately to keep going for sure. But again, if they do get a stop, I mean, obviously there's costs associated for the potential downtime for the contractor, the repairs maybe if it takes parts and labor, but likewise, well, there's also a cost associated for the dairy farmer, the livestock farmer, besides your chopping, because potentially the crop quality is reducing as the day goes on or whatever. So again, there's costs all sides, as you rightly point out. So moving back to where we were, say again, on the cutter head. So again, other things we're looking at here, again, checking our bearings and making sure they're all working correctly and in good condition. Your spiral floor, so that's the concave or wear part underneath the drum, mm-hmm. or the cutter head itself. So again, making sure that gap is set correctly, especially obviously if you put a new set of knives in, or vice versa, if the last crop you did was maize and you're going into grass, potentially you'll be changing that gap there. And likewise, that plate needs assessing for wear and any damage, etc. That point of view. I say kind of finally in around that area as well, kind of briefly talked about it in a roundabout way, but your sharpening stone, you know, I mean, and that whole assembly, again, making sure that assembly is working correctly. So the stone is obviously traveling the full width across the cutter head and adjusting down as it should do as the blades are sharpened from that respect. So again, obviously that's obviously important for keeping those knives sharp and whole machine running smoothly as time goes on.
Okay.
So again, we're moving back, I suppose. Your crop is then coming up through your transition chute here. We're really looking at wear again. It's a wear liner. So we're just checking those, making sure that they're in good condition and that they're ready for the season ahead. Likewise, again, all manufacturers, when it comes to kind of some of these wear liners, they do offer different materials in there as well for certain conditions or different kits for sticky conditions. So again, ascertain whether you think you're going to need those for the season. You know, if it's going to be an early season and we're going to be cutting a lot of grass at a high sugar content, you know, maybe we might want to consider having a stainless steel transition chute on the shelf in case we need it for those conditions. Or likewise, a water injection system to help with those gummy conditions that we can sometimes see in very high sugar content grass. Moving back then, we're at the blower or accelerator. So again, here we're checking the paddles. Are they in good condition? Do they need replacing? Is the gap between the paddle and the back of the tower set correctly? And likewise, again, we're checking those bearings around the blower. You know, it's going at a high speed. There's a lot of load on that component. We need to make sure those bearings, etc., are in good condition. And likewise as well, I didn't mention it, but in reality, a lot of these bearings typically on modern machines have auto greasers greasing these bearings and things like that. And you know, people can take that for granted, think, oh, well, the auto greaser's looking after that, I don't need to worry about it. Yeah, you're right to a point. But again, this is the time where we're checking all these components for any blockages or likewise as well. You know, there could be a leak in a pipe or something like that where it's got pinched or damaged. So again, making sure that the grease is getting to the right place. Because I say if those components aren't getting the correct lubrication, their lifetime will dramatically decrease.
I mean, that's something we have all these automated systems now, and it can be quite easy to become a little blasé, can't it? To think, oh, well, that's handled and this is handled and I only need to worry about this. But these automated components also need to be looked at to some extent as well, don't they?
Absolutely, yeah. No, I mean, I say, like, auto greaser there, like if a pipe has come off, or something like that, or there's a crack in it or a leak in it, you know, from an operations point of view, you won't know about it. If one's blocked, yes, potentially you will know, because most auto greasers have relief valves on them, you know, and you'll see grease spilling out around the applicator where it shouldn't be, and you'll know, look, something's adrift there from that point of view. But no, and again, that's one example. You know, auto oilers, same thing. People take for granted that, oh, well, the grease is being used or the oil level is going down, it must be going to the right place. But you're absolutely right, Matt. We do need to take the time to check these things over and make sure it is getting to where it needs to get to from that respect. Moving on then, I guess we're back to really wear liners and the tower, etc. So here, you know, we're just visual assessing whether the liners have life left in them around the top of the tower and this your spout rotation system. Again, making sure that any lubrication that's required there is done. If there's excessive wear on there, so on older machines, is there an adjustment that needs to be done there? So we're checking all of that. Likewise, moving up the spout, your spout flap, same story. You're checking there for excessive wear, or likewise, if there's linkages or hydraulics or wiring up in that general area, you know, we're having a quick look at that, making sure it's in good condition, that and that's going to be working effectively.
If you are spinning the spout round to check all of this stuff, yep. We've all heard the stories of people taking a shed door off or taking a spout off because they were a bit too close. So, again,
if you're operating these things or doing things like that, make sure you have plenty of space around you for obvious reasons. The other thing there, I guess, really to finish a bit on the wear side of things, you know, I mentioned mm-hmm. already that our pickup can potentially help us there by not taking in excessive soil or foreign objects, etc. I mean, obviously, different conditions will vary on how long a liner lasts in a machine or how long a wear part lasts in the machine. Mm-hmm. Other things to consider, again, look, in reality, we're probably getting late in the day for making these calls or going through machines at this stage. But, you know, if you are going out there to look at new liners, there's various ones on the market for different machines. And most manufacturers have different type of liners in terms of different hard facings, etc. You know, they might have a standard one. If we look at our John Deere ones, for example, we offer a Dura-Line components as well. Others are the same, you know, and the thing is with some of these extended wear parts, yes, they are two or three times the cost of a standard one. But I know with a lot of them, you know, you're getting 3, 4, 5 plus the life out of a standard one. And again, you know, it's a big cost maybe initially, but longer term, if you're keeping that machine for a few seasons or a long time, that's potentially going to save you time in terms of replacing liners year on, year out, etc. Other things, again, when it comes to liners as well, you know, obviously I'm going to sit here and talk to you and promote Genuine, but again, from all the tests and studies with these wear liners that we've done and have been done independently, you know, Genuine liners do last longer than your spurious ones that you'll get off the shelf. And I say that's just seems to be the case no matter where you go. Yes, they might be a little bit more expensive, but if you're getting the life out of them, you know, it's the cost per ton of material going through it or per cutter head hour you're putting on the machine is the big thing, isn't it?
Yeah, of course. Cheap is only cheap if you're getting the same benefits from it as elsewhere.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an incredibly thorough look through the machine. And while each individual job may only take seconds, especially if you're continuing to do it properly, I know John Deere also offer an expert check for these sort of things. So kind of, again, this might be a little late in the day for it, but is this to kind of get everything ready for the season?
Yeah, so an expert check, again, kind of can be done at any time, Matt, to be honest with you. But again, maybe getting a little bit late now. But look, it depends when your start date is. If you're not starting till the end of May or the start of June, look, there's still time to get it done. But yeah, expert checks, basically what it is, it's a specific inspection of a machine. In this case, we're talking about foragers and the headers. That's effectively carried out by a qualified and trained John Deere technician in our case, you know. And they're basically going through a machine from front to back, going through some of the things I've talked about and a lot more besides. They're not necessarily carrying out any repairs or anything like that. It's really following through a checklist of things and making sure that if there's anything that needs to be done, it's noted. Or likewise, if things are good, you know, it's noting that down as well. Again, it's really give each component or each task is given a score, so a plus or a minus or whatever. And likewise, any recommendations can be put together with the dealer or the technician and the customer. You know, and again, perfect time for doing this is really at the end of a season. You know, machines. Everything's fresh in your mind, and likewise you can go through the machine, you can see what work needs to be done, you can then work with the dealer to maybe get the parts ordered or work on fixed price for getting those jobs done over the winter at everyone's convenience, and not necessarily leaving it all to last minute. So yeah, I mean the benefits are, I mean it is a thorough check over, I say, by a qualified technician who's working on a lot of foragers or a lot of machines, you know, so that they know what to be looking out for. and then other things that can fail, that potentially the untrained eye won't see.
Takes a little bit of the uncertainty out of
absolutely, and likewise as well. I mean, any work that is carried out by them, you know, I mean, if that comes with a 6 months parts and labour warranty as well, you know. So there's lots of benefits for it, and obviously, yeah, as you say, reducing the risk of that unexpected downtime.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. That's been really informative. I think, again, aware that it's a little late in the day, but in a sense, everything about this is fairly timeless because it's something that should be done on a fairly regular basis,
yeah,
at least once a season. So thank you for your time today.
No problem, Matt. No problem at all.
Thanks for listening to Machinery Matters, a podcast brought to you by Farm Contractor and Large Scale Farmer magazine. For more information and latest news updates, head to our website, farmcontractormagazine.com, and follow us on Twitter @farmcommagazine.